Welcome to this week's episode of the Rugby Bits podcast as we dive into Chasing the Sun 2, episode 2. And I'm joined by Cooks again, but this time I'm taking the wheel, so I hope it goes well. Cooks, how are you, my man?
I'm loving this dual playmaking role we have now. I don't mind you coming at 10 some weeks, and next week I'll probably come back in at 10. It's just flowing nicely. But yeah, very, very good. Good weekend, good at Easter festivals. Yeah, so good scuba rugby, and then capped off with an incredible episode of Chasing the Sun too. How are you?
Absolutely. Very, very good. Very good. So it's the DuPont Ntamack such podcast show as I fumble my way through that. Anyway, enough of that rubbish. Cooks, there were almost tears early on in this episode when Malcolm Marx came on. So the episode kicks off with Marx, and he's sitting there. So we kind of knew what happened with the ending of episode one, where Rusty swears and he looks a little bit disappointed. So we know, obviously, having gone through it, that Malcolm gets injured, but then he's explaining what happened. But he's explaining what happened with Kitsoff and Vincent Koch involved. And obviously, Vincent's quite emotional because he's like, I've just gone and hurt one of my mates. So that was quite something. Cooks, I remember that vividly. It was hectic hearing that. And it's almost like we knew immediately that it was serious, even though we had to wait, but the word coming out of the Springbok camp was that he was done.
I think the scarier part with not just Malcolm getting injured was the fact that we had already lost three world-class players in Luati Jaga, Hendre Pollard, and Lukanya Am, who weren't there already. And then it was like, okay, cool. We've managed that. Get through Scotland. Now you're adding arguably, and the way this in the episode, probably the best player in the world at that moment was Malcolm Marx. He was in incredible form. So now you're thinking, shit. That's four world-class players down, and we've played one World Cup game. And as much as we load the box for their depth, and we know how much depth the Jacques Nienaber and Rassie created in those 3 years, losing four world-class players is still losing four world-class players. So I think that was for me the first initial panic. I was like, oh, gee, another one. And at that stage, obviously, we didn't know that the hooker being called up was going to be Hendre Pollard, but we were all thinking, I mean, that's four Oaks who will probably get into most starting 15s in the world. So as I felt so sorry for Malcolm, but I was thinking about the overall the whole time, thinking, I don't know how we can replace four world-class rugby players. I mean, we've still got 7, 8 weeks of the World Cup still to go. We've just been Scotland, and it just felt like a bridge too far. It's like, oh, I'm like, oh, Jesus, like something's got to give you.
Yeah, it was hard because, as you mentioned, we missed so many players, but we must also remember that Siya Kolisi had just come back from injury as well. And I know he had played one game. I don't think he played against Romania. I can't remember, but we were still like that was still very fresh, because he came back quickly, and we all kind of thinking, is he going to break down again? Because we've seen this story, where guys come back too early, it's for the World Cup and stuff like that. Or we see guys go to the World Cup and they don't perform. And yeah, so that was a lot to take in. But I did have a bit of a chuckle with Rusty and the green whistle when he said that Malcolm just said, like, give me something for the pain, and he took a big swig of that. And then Rusty said that he took some. I don't doubt him for a second. But yeah, like, so Cooks, this is you've mentioned that he's irreplaceable, and we all knew that. And the most amazing part is we didn't actually replace him. That was like the most amazing sort of backstory of this whole situation is we never replaced him. So he is irreplaceable. But what would that have meant for the opposition? Like, imagine them knowing, especially Ireland and France and New Zealand, who were probably going to play us later, what it meant to them knowing that we had lost a player like that.
I think for them, it's one of those things where they're going, geez, they've lost a big key. We've lost a big key to our cog, a big key to our machine. And like I think for them, they're thinking it's an area they can target, because obviously, historically, like I think some companies speaks about how, and MPS speak about how we've gone with the two world-class hookers. So basically, if you look at the top five hookers, we've got two of them, and they're coming on, and they're playing about as close to 40 minutes each. And then now, that's a weapon that's been taken away from us, and something where, barring Peter Steph to toy, no other forward in our pack is being asked to play longer than, let's say, 60 minutes. So I think the opposition is probably thinking, okay, cool, here's an area we can exploit now in terms of we can maybe try and push Bongi a little bit longer and then expose someone like Dion Free or a Yuan Probla or Joseph Dreba, whoever got called up at that time, because you're all thinking, obviously, hooker was. That was the big thing. Bongi probably wasn't the issue. It was more the opposition thinking, listen, if we can put someone like a Dreba or Yuan Probla, whoever we're going to call up, into a, they're going to have to play 20 minutes or 15 minutes. So that's probably the opposition thinking that's where we can essentially hurt the Springboks.
Yeah, 100%. And it kind of leads into my next question, which was about the hooker conversation. What was the plan? And the biggest thing for us, so very interestingly enough, I think in chasing the 1-2, we didn't really, like, they didn't show any weakness in places and with decisions they made, but we did leave a lot open with this squad, with like with just money as the fly half, with four scrummies, and now obviously with this. But even Russi in that team meeting was talking about, right, this is how I see it unfolding. Like, we have to push Bongi for 40 minutes, but then this is how we've got to activate Dion Fury and Marco van Staden. And I'm, for one, was I was. It's not probably just me. I mean, a lot of people were just like, there's no ways we're not bringing another hook in. Dion Fury is a makeshift hooker. Hadn't played hooker for Yonks before returning for the Springboks. But yeah, that conversation would have been something. Imagine him and Jacques Nienaber chatting about, it's cool, we're not going to bring in another hooker. The faith they have in the system and the players. And imagine the pressure on the players. Imagine, like, Dion Fury said, I'm going to the World Cup and I don't think, like, I'm going to play a Skalk Britsy role. And we all saw that happening. And the coaches would have said to him, listen, you'll cover hooker if we need. But I don't think he saw this coming. Imagine the pressure he had. He's like, I've always wanted my Springbok call-up. And now they're like, surprise, you're in the match day 23 moving forward.
One thing I enjoyed, I mean, we had Gareth Whittaker, one of the guys who was at NDW, was a big part of this project as executive producer. He commented last weekend, shout out to TNW and all the guys that put this together. And one thing I loved is as soon as they showed, say, Potter coming in for Malcolm Marx, was obviously the reactions from people outside of South Africa. The Irish fans saying we've gone crazy, we've gone, like, we've pushed the ball too far. And I'll be honest, I was almost on that line as always. But I obviously, I had faith in what Rusty and the guys were doing. I mean, you can go back to our Rugby Bits episodes where it's like, how far can we push these ideas? How far, like, sometimes rugby's still a game of convention. Like, rugby's still a game of, there's still principles that go down the line. You need two hookers. You need a scrum off on the bench. And there are still those sort of elements. I think that's where, for all of us, I think even the guys like Dion Free, it's like, and we were thinking, and like, geez, how far can we push this down? We get the 6-2s, we get the 7-1s. But now we're talking about front row here, which is a key, the most unconventional form of the game, where as brutal as it can be. Now you're saying, we're not going to bring another hooker. We're going to bring someone who hasn't played there for a long time there as well. But I go back to what Rusty said in the first episode, where he talked about how they pick their squads and they pick guys who are warriors first. Dion Fury was probably the perfect person for that role. Experienced in everything in rugby. Had seen the highest of highs, the lowest of lows. Could come back into the Stormers side, before he even got back in the Springboks, the Stormers side, where he got ridden off first and then went in this incredible man of the match run, eventually gets himself to a Springbok call-up. And someone like that, the right dog, as I mentioned a lot in the episode, to be able to handle that role. Mm-hmm. And I don't think if it was someone, let's say a junior, someone say in their 20s, like a Yuan Probe, as good as he plays, is like someone like maybe there who has not seen everything that has the game has to offer, not been through as much as, say, Dion Fury has from a rugby's perspective. And I think that's what summed up the selection of someone like Dion. Is if there's anyone in that to accept that sort of role, it's probably someone like that. I think that's where, again, it's testament to the Bok selection and how they probably justify that, them not picking a fluff. That's how they justify to themselves. They're going, we pick Oxford character. And we don't think they're going to be tested in that way. And I love that Dion mentions as well. Like, I didn't think, yes, I'm here. I can be a dog in training. I can bring the vibe experience on the training, not having to play hooker. I haven't played hooker for the longest time.
Yeah. They basically said to him, you've always said this is all you've wanted, to be a Springbok. Now prove it, basically. So
yeah.
Talking about top dog, Bonga Mnambi tells us a little bit about himself and his story. Side note, I'm not sure if he's got a daughter, but anyone who's going to date his daughter and comes into that house and wants to make friends with the top dog is going to shit himself, because he's got a way about him. He looks scary, and he seems to come across like if you step out of line, he's going to let you know. But a couple episodes ago, I was talking about Makuzulu Mapimpi and how, like, him being at border, how we could have missed him and his journey. And I never really thought about Bongi Mbonambi and his journey. And it's all these things that these stories we have in South Africa and throughout the world, but we obviously, it's highlighted for us now, about like little things that have happened that have literally changed someone's life. Not just Bongi Mbonambi's life, but his whole family and everything. But that whole thing about when he said, like, people saw something in me I hadn't seen yet, and how he wasn't able to go to these trainings, but friends of his and their family said, cool, we'll take you. And it's those type of things that are just incredible, and warms my heart, man.
No, it does. I mean, because it's such a great story. And, you know, it goes bigger than that. I mean, even after that shock, we still remember when he came through at the Bulls and then got the move to the Stormers, and how hard he worked after, like you said, he didn't believe in how good he was as a youngster. And then obviously had gotten through to play very good rugby, get to the Bulls, play Super Rugby, get to the Stormers, and then eventually working with the Springboks, where again, he's the next phase of his career started, where to prove he was good enough to stay there. Because we all remember him, I think maybe 2018, getting subbed off for 30 minutes in Australia.
Yeah.
Probably thinking that's it.
Yeah.
And then eventually, about a year and a bit later, he actually physically took Malcolm Ox's jersey as number two. Yes, we started the starting hooker. Yes, you did the split, but you at that stage, Bongi was a better hooker.
Yeah,
he had to start, and it wasn't a case of like no. I guess Malcolm may be a better finisher, things like, but there was a stage where in 2019, Bongi was our best hooker.
Yeah,
and that's saying something. We have Malcolm Ox, and to see him come full circle and then captain the Springboks, it just shows a journey. But Sharky, I still love that episode. One of my favorite images of 2023 is when Rassie puts on all seven forwards against the All Blacks. It's just Bongi just putting on that spray. And he just looks so menacing. And like, he, whenever the Boks want to get physical, like, like if there's ever like a poster child of Boks physicality, like Bongi is that perfect poster child for it.
Absolutely. He's a massive human. And as Rassie says, he looks like Mike Tyson. But he's got that look and that way and that aura about him. Like when he steps up, you know that you're not going to, if you misstep, you're going to get eaten. And he also knew that there were six other forwards coming on against the All Blacks. And he was like, come, let's go on. We're going to now make a statement move. So yeah, it was incredible. We'll get touch on the 7-1 bench against Ireland in a bit, but talking a little bit about Ireland, you know, just that stadium, I forgot when I saw in Chasing the Sun 2, the stadium and what it was like and the players talking about it, I completely forgot what it was at the time, but then the memories came flooding back. It was green. It was a game in Dublin. It was not being held in France.
I mean, jeez, I'm thinking back now, and like you said, like I forgot, because so much has happened in the World Cup. You know, you got the quarterfinals still. I mean, like I forgot how big that week was in terms of, like, Even through episode one, it almost halved and brought down, because the Rassie and speak about Scotland's the biggest game. So now even, I mean, clearly if I said that meeting, I'd have been shat on as well. Because clearly, so like, So like even when the episode started, I was like, oh yeah, jeez, I forgot how big this was. I mean, it was epic. But now I thought about again, like remember how big of a litmus test that was for Ireland for us? Because now obviously sometimes you watch Chasing the Sun, you're so focused on the box narrative, because obviously we won the World Cup and we saw what happened to the island. But I forgot leading into that week, we knew what the box would bring. But the biggest thing was, could Ireland step up physically? Because it almost felt like the missing piece to the side that were brought together. As much as we knew what the box would bring, I think, I'm sure you remember that. I think for most of people, the lead up was, can Ireland actually make the physical step up to match the Springboks?
Yeah, and they could. to cut a long story short,
Yeah,
some of those
they could.
hits were massive. It was crazy, but it was big. And we unveiled that 7-1 split in a competitive game, because the All Black game at Twickenham was kind of pre World Cup. We've now unloaded it for real in real
Listen,
life.
Don't underestimate the Qatar Airways Cup. We're the first and only holders of the Qatar Airways Cup. Please.
I'm sorry. My bad. But you know, talking about Ireland, like Shane Horgan, I think it was, you mentioned when he was growing up and playing rugby and playing for Ireland, Ireland's form and where they were just wasn't on the radar for them. Ireland have reached heights that they've never ever expected 10 years ago, 5 years ago even. They were incredible. And this was that test for them about doing it, taking it on the big stage, doing it at a World Cup against like the Springboks, who are defending champions, but also physical. But Rusty sums it up well, and him and Jacques Nienaber chat a lot about how clever Ireland are, and like what they do, and how data driven they are, and how information driven they do things. But Rusty summed it up well, where he said, "What did he say?" He says, "If you don't know your shit, you can't fuck them up physically." So
yeah,
the Springboks and South Africa, we're clever as well, but Rusty's so good, and Evan touches on it, but he's so good at just poking those buttons of the players, like. This is what he knows how to bring them up in their own way for that specific team. It's not the same team talk as we mentioned. You've got a one move. You can only do the move once. You can't keep doing it each week as a coach.
And it's interesting, Sharky, because, you know, I think probably one of the biggest themes of Chasing the Sun 1 was fuck them up physically. It's what one of the, but like, I love how now I would switch to like Rusty going, listen, we still gotta know what to do. We still gotta know our shit first before we can do that. But then also, he almost goes back to that. And he goes, "Hey, at the end of the day, Oaks, this is not chess." Right? At the end of the day, you still gotta be physical. Like, it's not chess at the end of the day. And my thing also, it's at this Ireland in box series. I'm so nasty now for later this year, because, I mean, we know Ireland now backs themselves to front up physically. We know they back themselves to win. In the Southern Hemisphere, having won in New Zealand. Hey, we haven't, the last time we won but two tests in New Zealand was in there was 09. So it's up that series beautifully, which I'm hoping, if Gareth does watch this, we need another documentary for that, please. Like, we just, since we...
Absolutely. Just a little bit. Just touch on it, maybe one episode. One episode over the 2 weeks will suffice. but yeah, like, Rusty does well to, like, tap into people, where you're showing like what people are saying and how South Africans are viewed overseas. Bongi, he definitely took that personally. Like when he says, "Your English rolls better off your tongue than mine," and or something along those lines. And just, he was having a proper dig, like, "Oh, you've got better stadiums, you've got this, and you don't really trust and feel that we can play a different game." But Rusty was great. Like he says, emotional lasts for 5 minutes, but personal lasts for 80.
Yeah.
So he's just kind of just tapping them slowly, just edging them on. The other thing
touching on that, I just, you know, looking back now, and you know, even I got a bit like my hair is going in the way, and I got that video and then where this book spoke about the Springboks, and I remember about you that those times we just felt like a little disrespectful, especially from an Irish point of view.
Yeah.
I'm like, we're bloody world champions. Three-time world champions.
And Lions. And we beat the Lions during that period.
Yeah. Exactly. Arguably the strongest Lions side they put together.
Yes.
So what I'm thinking is, like, I thought about that. Like, even I got a bit upset. I'm like, I don't care if you won the World Cup, not passing the ball once out of 12. We still did it. And they were in the same World Cup. What I'm saying is, like, we get the physical approach and all that, but like, the way they were speaking, like, like, oh, it's a one trick pony, it's one this and one this and this. I'm like, there comes a point where like it gets borderline disrespectful. Where it's
Absolutely.
like, okay, listen, Oaks, you can go up, there's a way of going like, okay, to beat them, you're gonna play like this. They were, but the way they're speaking, I'm like, Oaks, like, we are the defending champions here. Like, and also my thing is like, do you not learn from what happened with England in 2019, who basically their media blew them out the game before? Like, you mention our physicality. You mentioned that, for example, when you play one way, a boy start rugby, or we're just big bullies. So what do? You poke the bear. Boom, 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 boom. Let's piss off these bullies. Let's see how angry they can get at us, and then let's hope to see what happens.
Absolutely. This was Ireland's final. And that's probably, in hindsight, what was their biggest downfall. We in 2015, it happened a lot, and I heard Haneke a lot talking about meeting New Zealand in the semi-final. I didn't hear a lot of the final, and we lost to New Zealand in the final. And I'm not saying that this was the case internally, but externally and the vibe around Ireland, this essentially was their final. This was their stepping stone to go forward, was to beat South Africa. And ours was Scotland, because that was the big game for us. And Russie, like, absolutely is pissed by the fact that the guys are not chilled about the Irish game, but they didn't sort of behave how they should have, he felt. But Scotland was the big one for us. And this was the big one for Ireland. But this almost looked like it was their final, looking back at everything, because they brought it in the quarterfinal. But the truth is, they should have beaten the All Blacks. They're a better team. This was their final, and they were outside of the team and everything, they were talking it big time. And Russie made sure to let the squad know. But I'll tell you something. I know that I hate losing, and it's not great. But to having a look at it, and obviously in hindsight, I can view it a bit better. It was a really great moment for the Springboks not being able to beat a team, because we go to the World Cup to do it. Our loss in 2019 was against New Zealand, was the opening game. That there's a difference to that, and coming off where we did. But now, you know, you want to be able to beat them. And that was the big thing. So obviously we had a massive chance of meeting them in the final again, but that changed in the quarterfinal for a lot of people. But back to the Ireland game, on the big hits, Francie Malherbe was when he the reactions from the players, even Pfaff was pretty good about how Ireland brought it. Like, they were big and they were sending it hard.
Yeah, they brought it, Chucky. It was, but also, but I think, like, but hearing that, like, obviously in the episode, like with the close cam, this is how hard the hits were, because it was the one. Remember Rusty made the quote in 2019 before they played Wales, and he said, and he's like, I promise the Ireland, they go away eventually. And I think Pfaff touched on it and he goes, like, they didn't go away.
Yes.
And then, like, which was the big difference. And they didn't. And it was weird to see, like, obviously, I think we remember the mistakes, we remember the Marnie miss kicks. And it was such a game where, the margin was so far. And I think for us, I think the biggest thing was, can they withstand that bulk physicality? And they did. And I think this is what made the game. It was a great game of rugby. It had everything, that game. I mean, there was opportunities, there was tries, good tries as well. I mean, there was drama, like ref decisions that could have gone either way. I still stand by Ben O'Keefe got the call right at the end.
Absolutely.
And so it's one of those it was a great test match. And Shaki, I love what you said, that at that time, for me, when it ended, it wasn't more bad Springboks, it was a little bit more good Ireland. And I was more worried about how Ireland in the long run, in terms of if you meet them in the final, then obviously I worry about the box. We will bounce back. But then I was like, man, we meet these guys in the final. Yes, we missed chances, but they also weren't at their fluid best. So they might also find a way. So it actually gave me more caution about Ireland, but I was still fine in the Springbok. I was still fine in terms of the box. I mean, we'll finally recover. But I genuinely thought Ireland, at that stage, I was like, shit, these dogs could win the World Cup.
Absolutely. That's been their vibe for a while. After beating New Zealand, they've switched on. They grand slammed in 2023 as well, so they were perfectly set up for this. And obviously, beating us was massive. But and Dwayne touched on it, and I'm always a massive, like, I always, you've got to look at it. Like, there are a lot of fans that are South Africa lost their shit, but he touched on it, and it's the truth, especially at the highest level. As hard as we prepare and we're seeing what we're doing for Ireland, Ireland are doing exactly the same thing. You know, yeah. There's going to be like they're also preparing. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see where the Springboks, where they see the Springboks are weak and what they do. But Ireland bought it for 80 minutes. And they also did it with 5-3 bench. And they only first time they've ever announced a 6-2 was this year. So they did it with a 5-3 bench. So that was crazy. But just to say, show you how close the game was, like Ireland had a 50-something percent of territory and possession. But I mean, we made 3 line-out steals. They've got a solid line-out. We really pushed them on that. Scrums-wise and everything was quite interesting. We lost 2, they lost 2. It was very, it was an amazing game. And I really wanted to watch it before we recorded, but I didn't want to speak too much about the game on other things. I'd rather just focus on what they're doing. I'm definitely going to watch it a little later. One of the big moments for me was when Peter Steph Tatoi came close, Ireland ripped it, and we got a 5-meter scrum, and then Jesse Creel comes close and pops to Khaleesi, who knocks on. There were so many moments, and that's just the way it is when it's two teams, probably best teams with France at the tournament at that stage, that are really cooking. It's just those small margins, and it's crazy. But I want to talk about Johnny Sexton, who South Africans love to hate. But him and Willemse, there was fire, man. Willemse's young, but he's not arrogant and full of shit. Like, he doesn't get in your face for no reason at all, but he was going hard. Like, to have two of your teammates pull you back.
I mean, that's classic Sexton. I can't remember in the episode you mentioned that there's certain players opposition have who know how to rile you up, who know how to get underneath certain other players' skin. I think Johnny Sexton is definitely one of those. He is not the most liked player by any account, but obviously because of, I mean, he's not a quieter, okay? And he's not an oak to let things go as well. And so that was such an interesting moment because you could see, like, for example, like the tide sort of turning off there, the bit more frustration, gets a bit more niggly, you know, it becomes a lot more, the detail sort of kind of falls away because players are sort of focused on, you know, I'm going to get this oak back. I'm going to get him back. I want to get him back. So that's sort of the thing that you could see from there. But I mean, that's Johnny Sexton at his best. And and seeing Willemse react like that way, the way he got pulled back as well, because you could see, like,
he wanted more, man.
No one like jumping. I mean, it's like, hey, well, man, this guy's, we've scored the try, walk back. We've said, let the try speak for itself.
Yeah. He was angry and he wanted more, man. And that was the thing. Like, yeah. I've never seen Damien Willemse do that. But I'll tell you something. I took my daughter to watch the Stormers play the other day. Willemse and Lubbock played while we're watching Chasing the Sun and Damien's running down the field and he does that step. And I could just see, she was like, oh, I've seen that somewhere before. So it was, it's quite a unique step he's got. But yeah, the game ended. Listen, it was really close. Like, we lost, but it went down to 2-3 meters away from the try line, driving more where we're looking good. Driving malls, just like scrums, are often a little bit of a lottery, but I watched it without paying attention, like without focusing on it, like looking at the bigger picture. I was like, oh, hang on a second. The ref shouldn't have blown his whistle. Then I focused on actually the mall again, and he can't see it. The ball's visible from that camera angle, but he can't see it. So you can't really blame him for that. But touching on post-game, very interesting. Very interesting. The players are very much like, it's not the end of the world. Like, we haven't messed up our World Cup so badly that we're going home. We knew that we beat Scotland, that Ireland didn't matter. Everyone was kind of calm by that. They were like, cool, we lost, it's not great, we gave it our all. In steps Rassie, totally different situation. He's like all about, like, what message are you sending to the youngster that's looking up to you? How have you played as an individual to help the team? Like, what's going on? And he is acid. And it was crazy. Again, Rassie's so well there. He's done well. Like, don't ever let the team think they know what's cracking, because they've kind of gone through Scotland, failed against Ireland, and they're like, cool, we're okay. And he's like, no, buddy, you're not. We could go home next week.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I just love that ending was one of the wildest I've seen in a long time, because of the way it just develops and There's a time when Russell's like holding the ball and he's like playing with the ball here, and you can just see that he is absolutely seething. And you can see like, he kept building up because you see him at the stadium walking around with the ball in his hand. Then you see him at the post match in the change room, just standing there. By the time he gets to the video session, you can absolutely see he's at the highest point of like, and I'm probably sure like maybe someone walks in the video session with a smile or two, and he's like, I'm gonna get these oaks, I'm with them. But again, it's the way of using personal experience to sort of hone down on the message. And I love his message where he speaks about like, I didn't see enough regret on their faces. I didn't see enough we fucked up on their faces. And and that was his big talking point, whereas it wasn't like the loss, it's the way the reaction was after the loss. And he went to town on that. And I think it's something that he can probably get away with those ones tournament. And the way that he timed it then, because you can definitely feel like the way the Springboks and the way they reacted after that tournament. Because I mean, we had the Tonga game, but then we were going into the playoffs where we got into places where the Oaks did show that they'll put they almost die for the country, those 3-1-point games. So the nice thing about the tournament sometimes is, I mean, about the documentaries, sometimes you can see the hindsight of the craziness because you know the end result. So, but when you go back then, you think it wasn't a point where like you're on a knife edge, because if the Oaks don't shape up now and realize we're playing for now, we got France with the All Blacks waiting for us. And now's not the time. And oh man, it was, I mean, some of those quotables, yeah. I mean, like, what did you call them? You call them false. And you said some of you, so it's bigger than the game.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow. And it's like, poof, that is, like, it's such good. That documentary is so good.
Yeah.
That was one of the best episodes. Like, I said the first one was one of the best ones, but that was also an incredible episode again, in just in terms of the contrast of emotions from the Scotland game to, because in the Scotland game, everyone, we were buzzing off that win to that now, to the Ireland game. Oh, jeez.
I know. Just take yourself back to the first week in October 2023. We were in the week ahead of the quarterfinal. That's essentially what we are now. We've got 3 episodes of Chasing the Sun, 2 left. We've got a quarterfinal, semifinal, and final. Spoiler alert, we do make it quite far, but it's going to be like, it's so amazing. It's such amazing TV, so well produced and set up and done. And I take my hat off to everyone involved, because you know what's happening, because we know what's happened. But in those episodes, there's other stuff happening. There's like, apart from the player sort of where they jump off onto a player and talk about his life. And besides that, you know, there's other stuff that always make you wonder and always make you think. And, you know, you mentioned Russie, like on the field when they were singing Zombie, which has now been changed to Russie. He's just sitting in there soaking it all up. And you know, like he's soaking it up. That ball's about to explode. He's just soaking it up.
Yeah.
Like, you do not come and play us and get to celebrate like this. This is not how the Springboks are and how they work and all that. So yeah, it was amazing. And now having to wait for another one episode. One game at a time, eh? One game at a time.
It's basically one episode at a time. But like, you're right. I mean, it's what I love the most about, I think, now that I'm enjoying about season two. I mean, Chasing the Sun season two is, we knew that going into this World Cup, there's a few emotional stories that happened, but the rugby was probably the big story. As in, because we'd won the World Cup before. Yes, we got like stories like Marnie, and we got Dion Free, and now we touched on things about Dwayne and Bongi, which I've enjoyed. But for me, the rugby's been the big story. And what's happened after that, because for me as a rugby fan, it was always, how on earth am I going to defend? How are we going to defend this thing? This is the hardest World Cup to defend. Everyone is so good. And we see now already the planning for Scotland and how we fought off the Ireland win, that how meticulous the planning was and how meticulous the coaches had to be in order to get these Oaks at their best every single time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Rugby Bits podcast as we review the Chasing the Sun 2 series that's out. We look forward to chatting to you next week after the quarterfinal clash against the French. Cooks, thanks, my man. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a great week.
Thanks, Shoki. Have a good one, guys.